again, everybody. It's time for the Mainland Podcast, episode number 89. I am Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of themainland.com. And joining me is Dave Rowe, one of our many staff writers. Dave, how are we doing this week?
Well, I'm recovered from the weekend, as I hope everybody else is. I feel a little defensive.
Yeah.
But other than that, I'm feeling good.
That's good. It's cool. I'm glad to hear you're not feeling like a monkey's uncle. lots to talk about this week, Dave. Lots to talk about. Orlando City, since we last talked, Orlando City with two games, one in the midweek against DC United and one on Sunday night against the Chicago Fire. Let's start out talking a little bit about DC United. Orlando City and DC played a very cagey game. For the entire first half, it was probably not the most beautiful match in the beautiful game's history in terms of, opportunities and creating chances and that kind of thing, especially early. Orlando just kind of did what they needed to do for a while and hung in there. And DC looked like they came in with a real purpose of making sure they took care of their end of the field and defended well. And they were happy to give possession up and sort of try to hit on the counter with Lamar Nagel and Luciano Acosta and guys like that. But it just didn't seem like a whole lot was going well for either team in the final third. And then Jason Christ inserted Giles Barnes into the game for Lewis Gill at the 59-minute mark, and Barnes, within a few seconds, made a sliding block to knock a ball out for a throw, and just that little bit of energy right there just sort of created a spark. And from that point on, Giles Barnes just couldn't be stopped. He was just doing everything that you want him to do. He was only on the pitch 7 minutes before he dribbled through three guys, drew a foul, and then the ensuing free kick resulted in the opener with Will Johnson delivering in to Kyle Larin, who finally got back on the score sheet.
So here's what I think about all of what you just said. So, yes, first half kind of slow, but a little bit back and forth. There were shots. I mean, you know, Gil had MTG, Larin. You know, it wasn't that they weren't there. It just didn't seem coherent. Mm-hmm. But it was raining. There were, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Very rainy day. Very, very right. Big downpour through much of the first half.
But like you said, once Barnes came in, and here's the thing I want to – you already mentioned what Barnes did. Here's what I want to mention about Barnes is that day or the day before, there was an article that mentioned Barnes as a difference maker. And there was comments on our website that saying, really, come on, Barnes hasn't done that much. And then that very day or that next day, Barnes comes in and boom, he's the difference maker going forward. Mm-hmm. And like you said, I mean, you know, not only so on that sliding tackle that resulted in the kick that when he got up from that, he went over to the wall and he's raising his arms and he's getting everybody. And the wall responded. Not that I'm surprised because that's what they do. Mm-hmm. But they responded. I mean, he got the crowd back into it in a rainy day.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, he was an emotional leader at that point for the team. I mean, that can't be understated.
Well, that's the big word there, emotional. I mean, he brought a lot of passion into the game with him. He got the crowd pumped up. It got his teammates pumped up. And, you know, Johnson, who has been kind of inconsistent recently on set pieces, delivered an unbelievable ball.
Unbelievable.
In fact, Jose Aja almost got on it, and it's a good thing he didn't, because then Larin with Steve Bierenbaum, basically he was wearing Steve Bierenbaum as a coat. Like, if you couldn't even, if, you know, you got out of the bath and you put on your robe, that's what Steve Bierenbaum was for Kyle Larin. And he's not a small man, but Kyle was strong enough to say, all right, you can hang all over me. I'm still going to head this in for the first goal.
Quite frankly, I'm wondering if Steve proposed to him before he did that, because quite frankly, he was wrapped around him.
I hope he bought him dinner at least.
At least he bought him dinner, right? Because I mean, if he hadn't scored on that goal, if it hadn't been a foul, it should have been. Because oh my God, when you go back and look at the replay, he is hugging the man. Mm-hmm. It's that obvious. But you know, the important part of that is how strong Kyle Larin is. Let's not ignore that. I mean, we hear, you and I hear occasionally through, you know, comments and this and that, that, you know, Kyle can do this, Kyle can do that. You know what? Kyle is an incredibly strong striker. He does exactly what he is supposed to do. He is that big guy that is going to score those goals, that he can use his body, he can use his physical mass, for lack of a better word, to get himself in the places and move people around and do those things. And that was the perfect example of that, where literally there is a person wrapped around him trying to keep him away, almost tackling him from scoring a goal, and yet he still is able to get his head on the ball and put it in the goal.
Yeah, you know, when things are not going well for a bigger kind of athlete, I hear about this in basketball all the time. It's a thing in soccer and that kind of thing. When a big athlete things aren't going well for them, a lot of fans seem to put the label lazy or not trying or apathetic or whatever on them. And I don't think that you could ever describe Kyle Larin as a lazy individual. I don't think you could ever say he doesn't care. What kind of feeds that sort of those sort of comments is that he's a quiet guy. He's not a big, you know, rah-rah, loud, demonstrative man. But, you know, he did a great job of using his strength and his power and the kind of things you want your target striker to do. And, you know, sometimes, if anything, he may be pressing too hard. Now, the other thing is when you say, well, he's lazy, he's not running, whatever, you got to remember that how much soccer has been played this year, and especially within the last month, by this team. In fact, just completed another 3 games in 9 days kind of thing. And
right.
Kyle Larin has been on the field for almost every minute of that. He has to conserve energy at points in the game or he won't last the 90 minutes. So I don't agree with the people that say, oh, he's lazy, he's not trying. That's all garbage.
Anybody who's looking and watching what he does when he's in that upper third, what the emotion that he's doing, especially when – And you have to look off the ball to see what's going on, okay? Because you have to see the things that the other team are doing to him to keep him from getting on the ball, okay? The physical impediments that he's having to work through. I mean, he's like a running back trying to get through a line to get to the goal line, to get to be able to get to the ball, you know, I mean, to put it in American football terms. So – yeah, you're right. The idea that he's not working, that he's lazy, is absolutely ludicrous. And if anybody doubts us, go look back, look at the film, look at what he's doing when the ball is not near him. Mm-hmm. That he is working inside the box, and even not inside the box. I mean, we've talked about it before, where he's tracked back to go, you know, help on defense, and he's done other things. The idea that Kyle Larin is not a full team player is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, Jason Kreis always lauds him for his work ethic and his work in training. I mean, you know, guys that are lazy don't work hard in training. I mean, he works hard in training, and we hear about it every day. It's a point that's being made, and it's not something that Jason Kreis would bring up if it weren't happening. So anyway, yeah, the good thing is.
Jason Kreis doesn't bring up anything unless it's actually real.
The good thing is that, you know, Kyle had been in a little bit of a slump, and it was good to see him get back on the score sheet. And
absolutely.
And especially, that, you know, I felt that it was important to get the first goal in that game, and Orlando was able to get that first goal. And then it just seemed like they were going to, you know, they got some chances after that, but they just didn't seem to be able to get that last ball. Either the shot wasn't on target or Bill Hamid would make a good save. And it seemed like it was going to be one of those games where, are they going to score a late one and steal points from us? But then Giles Barnes got rewarded from the soccer gods for his hard work by taking a shot from distance, and it just went right through Bill Hamid's hands and into the net to make it
2-0. It was astounding.
It was crazy. It was like one of those things where, you know, you always think on a wet day, you know, why not just take a shot whenever you can, you know, as long as you get it on target. And that was one of those cases where it was like, you know, Jason Kreis didn't want Giles Barnes shooting from out there. But
hell, I didn't want him to do.
No, and I was like, oh, that's a waste. And it's through his hands and in. And you don't expect Bill Hamid to make that kind of mistake. But it was a big insurance goal. And Orlando City gets out of there with a 2-0 win. And Giles Barnes deserved a goal for his performance in that game.
Okay, he absolutely did because he was the spark, but it wasn't through his hands. Let's be very, very clear. It didn't go through his hands. He was at an angle at such that when the ball came in, it bounced off his hands, but his hands were at an angle that it went off of them. It didn't go through because it didn't go through the left and right hands. It went off of the right hand or off the left hand and still went in the goal. So it looked like it had no pace whatsoever.
Well, okay, but it didn't go straight through, but I think you're splitting hairs with what I'm saying. It did deflect up, but obviously he got two hands on the ball.
He got two hands on the ball, and it still went in. And you know but you know, you and I are looking at that as it's happening, and we're saying, yeah, it doesn't have enough pace on it to. I mean, if it's Carlos Rios, we're like, okay, well maybe it goes off and then it goes in because it's got pace. Giles Barnes were like, okay.
Right, he didn't crush it.
He didn't crush it, and then it just kind of went in.
Yeah, it made it even more
amazing.
Phenomenal.
I jumped off my couch. I'm high fiving my kids. You know, I mean, it was absolutely amazing. So yeah, the thing I don't want us to forget, and I'm not saying that you were going to, was the save of the week.
The save of the week is the double save, and of course it was still 1-0 at that point, it was an opportunity for DC to get right back in the game, in fact. And you know, it was a bad back pass by Jose Aja, who had a very good game, but he had about three moments in that game that he made huge mistakes, and one of them was that back pass. Didn't get where it needed to go. Joe Bendick came off his line to try to get to it first, but was beaten to it by Lamar Nagel, who rounded him and had nothing but an open net and Jonathan Spector in front of him. And he shot it. Spector deflected it up in the air with his feet. And Sebastian Letou, a substitute off the bench and a very good player, was certain to head that in. But Bendick's hustle play, he gets all the way back and just swipes it almost directly off the head of Letou before he can put it in the net. It was an unbelievable moment in that game for sure.
Okay, so two things on that. All right, so Bendick came out as he should have, and he got big as he should have, and he missed, which, okay, I mean, given how far he had to come out, that's going to happen occasionally. Mm-hmm. So that happens. Bendick is caught out. What we need to focus on is the two things that happen after that. So Spector is doing what he's supposed to do, which is backing up his goalie. He goes back. He, as much as he can without using his hands, gets big and takes him on. He gets the deflection. The deflection pops up. Now, the second thing we're going to focus on is Bendick doing his job, which is as soon as he's gotten – I mean, if you go back and look at the video, as soon as he hit the ground, he bounced back up, rose back up, took a little around, started running back even before it got popped up. And is moving towards the corner of the goal, gets there and bangs it out with his fist. It was absolutely, as of the recording of this, he was 91% save of the week.
Yeah, he was unbelievable on that. Both of those fine gentlemen were on that play to keep Orlando City ahead at the point and you know, enabled Giles Barnes to put the game away later. But although maybe it would have been just desserts for Giles to have gotten that game winner on that goal. But it was nice. And in fact, Tony Rocha, who was the second half substitute, got his first MLS assist on Giles Barnes' goal for a nice little layoff. Barnes played it to Rocha. Rocha laid it back off for him, and then he shot and scored. So nice to see Tony get his first assist. But anyway, the big thing, Dave, is that it snapped the 6-game winless streak, and Orlando City remaining unbeaten just with one loss in their home stadium. And so the home magic continues for Orlando City.
And just as important, we got a win in May.
Yeah, it was the last game of May, and with 7 fixtures in May, you would think that they would get at least one win, and that's all they ended up getting. But the important thing is they needed that win for their belief and for their confidence, and because they've had some good performances during the 6-game winless streak, just not getting rewarded, and they finally they put it all together, got the shutout, got the win, and you know, they went into the weekend feeling pretty good. And
Here's what's funny is, as good as that win was, and at whatever point we talk about the Chicago game, I think the Chicago game was actually more important than the win that, with DC United.
Well, we're going to talk about the Chicago game in just 1 minute, but first you're going to give me your man of the match for the DC game.
Okay, so my man of the match for the DC game is it has to be Barnes. I mean, let's face it. I mean, he came on. He changed the complexion of the game. Mm-hmm. He inspired everyone. He not only got a goal, but he created chances. He got everybody up. I mean, he was obviously a difference maker at the point when he came in. So, I mean, yeah, that's it. I mean, it was Barnes.
Yep, total agreement. He changed the emotion of the game. He changed everything about the game. He basically turned Orlando City into a new team.
Yes.
Anyway, let's talk about the Chicago Fire, because I thought, you know, if Orlando was going to get that victory against DC United, that they probably would get a boost and go in on Sunday and get a win over Chicago. And it was not a win, but it was a good result considering the circumstances, because we saw the return of Rafael Ramos at right back, giving Scott Sutter a rare game off. And so Ramos gets his first MLS action of the year. It lasted 26 minutes. Going to talk much more, I'm sure, about the decisions of referee Ted Uncle in just a bit. But suffice it to say, a ball's popped up in the air. Rafa tracks it in the air. You can see him looking at the ball the whole way, sticks out a toe to bring it in. And, you know, right as the ball arrives, so does Brandon Vincent. And, you know, basically it was just a collision on a 50-50 ball in the air. Yet Rafael Ramos is the one that gets sent off by Ted Uncle. That changed the entire game right away. Credit to Jason Christ for saying we can still get a win in this game. I'm just going to put Will Johnson at right back and keep my strikers on the field, and maybe we can hit him on the counter and get a goal here. And so he was able to play the entire rest of the first half with Johnson at right back. And, you know, there were opportunities. There was an opportunity where Matt Lampson was well off his line and Kyle Larin lined up a shot, and where he probably should have gone for a chip, he decided to hit it with power and unfortunately hit it right at Lampson, and it was saved. But that was an excellent opportunity to take the lead despite being down a man. But it was not meant to be, and the teams went to the locker room at 0-0.
Yeah, and that was the as you said, the best opportunity for Orlando to score a goal in that game, given that, well, one, we had already gone down one player. And, you know, but I do like the fact that Coach hadn't given up on attacking. Obviously, when you're a man down, you do have to change your tactics, but he still had the idea and said, I mean, like you said, I mean, he moved Will back rather than bringing Sutter in. And the idea was, okay, well, we're still going to work for the counter. You know, there's opportunity there. And he kept that. He kept that even going into the second half. And credit to him, because there were opportunities, not just that one, but there were opportunities later that unfortunately didn't come to fruition. But it still was a good, solid game plan.
Yeah, I asked Jason after the game. I said, you know, how do you personally approach these types of games when you get a guy sent off, in terms of going for the win or parking the bus and that kind of thing, just trying to hang on? And he said at 10, he will still try to hit on the counter, try to get a goal. But once it got down to 9, obviously it was just hang on and get what, you know, get anything you can get out of the game. And you know, it didn't take a whole lot of time in the second half for,
unfortunately,
Orlando City goes down at 66 minutes, still 0-0. Antonio Nocerino goes in for a challenge and gets a straight red as well. Now, in this play in particular, I felt like he was, again, tracking a ball in the air he thought he could get to. Matt Polster slid in from the side, and instead of his studs, you know, knocking the ball back to his teammate where he basically looked like he meant to just push that ball right back where it came from to his teammate or toward a teammate upfield and in one motion. But instead, he got the rear end of Matt Polster, and it was a straight red. And this was a situation where I could see why you would give him a red, but to me, it looked like it wasn't intentional. It looked like it was an honest attempt to play the ball, which doesn't excuse you, but it looked like, given the circumstances, considering a man had already been sent off, considering Antonio Nocerino had not even fouled a single player throughout the entire game, I thought a straight red was pretty harsh, but there we were with nine men.
Okay, so we're at the choose your own adventure part of the podcast here, Michael. Do you want to have me talk about Uncle, or do you want me to talk about the other stuff?
No, we'll get to Ted Uncle in due time.
Okay, so look, Nocerino, yes, studs up, but like you said, if it had been anything other than already a red played, then okay, he might have gotten a yellow, and it might have even been warranted. But it certainly would have been a straight red, and you know, game would have been played on, and it might not even been that. But
I mean, for my money, I saw worse challenges in that game not even get a card. I mean, there was I forget who it was, but somebody went into Higuita with both feet up, both studs showing on both shoes, got Higuita really good, and it was just a regular foul.
Oh, yeah. So. No, absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, that's why I was asking if you wanted to get into the Ted Uncle thing.
So, I'm just saying that now, and I'm going to move on, but we'll talk about the referee.
Yeah, we'll come back to that. Come back to that.
So,
yeah, anyway.
It's nil-nil, and, you know, now you're down nine men, and now you really have a tough ask for you know, you're playing eight field players in a 4-4. There's no top. There's zero at the top. It's a 4-4-0. And he goes even more defensive. He takes off, you know, Rivas came off, you know, Laren came off.
I mean, Kaká is the top guy, and Kaká is only there in a pseudo weekend attack sense.
He was not really out there to attack so much as to.
No, of course he wasn't.
He was there to take pressure off with possession and you know, be able to hold the ball a few extra seconds, whereas you know most of your midfielders are not going to necessarily be able to, you know, dribble through a couple of guys and hang on to the ball for a few seconds to give your defense a breather. But
exactly
that's why
right
out there. So they you know, he gets down toward the end and time's running out and Chicago's throwing more and more forward. They're bringing off defensive players and bringing on attackers. They're really going for it. And you know, he gets into stoppage time and they hit the crossbar. And then a couple of minutes later, they hit the crossbar again. And it was just like that second crossbar told me, hey, we've got a shot at hanging on to this point. And sure enough, shortly thereafter, the whistle blew. It was a nil-nil draw. The best nil-nil draw you'll ever, ever get.
Okay, so a couple things. One, the first hit the crossbar. Hits go straight down.
Yeah, straight
and
down.
And they had to review that one to make sure it didn't go in. And it did not. And they reviewed it and did not. And then we get the second crossbar hit. And now, listeners don't know, I wasn't able to watch the game. I'm driving back from Orlando, listening to the game on the radio as I'm driving. So obviously being very safe as I'm pumping my fist in the air every time we stop a potential goal. But so I'm thinking to myself, finally, the crossbars are paying us back because they've killed us a couple times earlier. They owe us.
Oh, sure. Yeah, for sure. It's been like eight crossbars this year.
Right.
Eight woodwork hits.
Right. So they owe us. So they gave us two back. You know what? I'll give it to them. You gave us two back. That's fine. I'm not saying they don't still owe us, but they gave us two back in that game. That's fine. And then, you know, but more importantly, I mean, crossbar, that's luck. What we should focus on is the absolute dedication that the entire team had defense on that. I mean, because when you go one man down, okay, you have to play defense. When you go two man down, Oh my God! I mean, Coach even himself said it. He was like, when he went in the press conference, he was like, "Look, I don't want to take any questions about red cards because I just want to focus on what my guys did after that and how positive they played."
And they really played hard for each other
in
that game.
I mean, there were bodies being thrown. If you go back, because I did today, if you go back and look at the game, they were throwing their bodies around, blocking balls, doing everything they could to keep stuff out of the goal. I mean, it's amazing. It was truly, if it's not the best defensive game of the year in MLS, then I will challenge anybody, and this is obviously on record or on a podcast, I will challenge anybody to tell me by the end of the season what is the best defensive effort by any team in MLS.
It was one of the better performances you'll see on defense. DC didn't get that many really good quality chances, even though they were up two men. I mean, or sorry, Chicago didn't get. And this is a team with the league's leading goal scorer. So they weren't getting real good quality chances. It was a very organized defense, despite it only being eight men and a goalkeeper. It was, they were forcing everything outside. They were staying very compact, very organized, making cross after cross come in. And here's where I talk about Leo Pereira, because every cross in, he seemed to head 30 yards down the field. I mean, the man was he was like a man possessed. He's starting for Jose Aja, and he came up big. I thought Pereira was one of the better performers on the night. I thought Scott Sutter did a nice job once he came in for Johnson to start the second half. I thought that Spector obviously had a good game as well, and and PC was – I don't think anybody ran as much as PC did in that game.
Well, no, and let's not forget Joe Bendick early, because it's easy to focus on the latter half of the game when, mm-hmm. everybody's scoring in by. But early on, Bendick had a bunch of big saves early in the game that kept it from, having to come back.
Yep, six save night for Joe. He's probably his best one was he had a couple of saves at the end of the first half. Against Nikolic, and I think those were probably his best saves of the game, and just a really nice game from Joe. So I'm going to give my man of the match first this time, since we're talking two games. I'm going to go with Will Johnson, who not only had to play out of position for a good portion of the game and did it very well, as we saw early in the season. He, in fact, got involved right away with knocking down a ball over the top with a header. He was more than that, though. He was the emotional leader. He was every bit as, fiery and passionate and charging up his teammates Sunday night as Giles Barnes was on Wednesday night. So Will Johnson, for that reason alone, and he had a good game besides, was my man of the match.
Well, I like it better when you ask me who my man of the match is first, so that I'm not second fiddle, because also my man of the match is also Will Johnson, because of all the reasons you said. And I even alluded to it early when we started talking about the match, that he was the one that after the red card was the one that kept the team together, that did everything. I mean, the one point I'll add is that he did all of that, and then when Kaká came in, without hesitation, he passed the armband off.
Yeah, I mean, he's just a class act. He's not. He knows that the team captain is Kaká.
Right, but
he's going to always be Johnny on the spot. Not just do it. He does it demonstrably. He wants everybody to know he is bowing down to the Brazilian. Hey, this is not my team. This is Kaká's.
Yeah, but I don't even think it's that. I think it's more of a respect thing. I don't even think it's a bowing down. I think it's simply a, look, when I'm on the field and Kaká's not on the field, I'm going to take this job and I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. And when he's not, I'm going to hand off the armband, but I'm still going to do everything I can to do my best job. It's not like he hands off the armband and then he stops doing stuff. He doesn't. He simply hands off the armband. He still does everything that he was going to do prior to that.
Well, it's Will's going to Will. There's no question.
Will is going to Will. And, yeah. Okay, whether Kaká is on the field or not, Will is going to Will. And, right, exactly. So, Michael, good job. And, Will's going to Will.
And Dave,
I like it.
where there's a will, there's a way.
So just
to let you know. Anyway, yeah, so big point for Orlando, and you know, under the very difficult circumstances, once you go down a man early, probably the best result you're going to get is a draw, and so they get another result at the Purple Palace. And
if you go two men down, the best result ever is a draw. So let's face it.
Yeah, I think the last time there's only been one other time Orlando City in MLS play has been down two men, and I think they lost that game 5-0.
Right. No, I'm not even saying that. I'm saying go back to soccer and find two men down, win.
Yeah, I know. It's just not going to happen. We're on the same page. I think you're arguing, even though I'm not arguing with you.
No, we're not. We're not arguing. We're agreeing. We're vehemently agreeing with each other. Yes. Okay.
All right. So now let's get into this.
All right. Let's go.
Does Ted Uncle belong in MLS? Universally, let me start off by saying universally, it doesn't matter what team's fans you are seeing on Twitter. If they find out they've got Ted Uncle, it's an immediate reaction, negative reaction. For a guy who is a veteran ref in this league to continuously just absolutely draw this much hatred from every fan base, it's got to say something. It's like no single – I've never seen anyone defend him as a good referee.
Yes, exactly. If it was certain fan bases, then you can chalk it up to favoritism. But if it's every fan base, then we are talking about a systemic problem regarding the referee in question, and thus they need to be gone.
Yeah, so – obviously, we will probably both say there's no way in hell Rafael Ramos should have got sent off.
There's no way anybody is going to say actually, let's be clear. Every single person that saw that, including people who played the game, including people who played the game, including referees that played the game and or referees that refereed the game, went on Twitter and said, yeah, that was not right.
Except Simon Borg. Simon Borg said it's a red.
Okay, except Simon Borg, yes.
Which, you know, Borg gonna Borg as well. So
there's always gonna be one.
But I would say that obviously the club is appealing that red card. They're not appealing Nocherino's, which had a much more difficult time of being overturned. Again, to overturn a red card, it's got to be unanimous between the three members of the panel, and that's very, very difficult since there is an official on the panel. So they don't like to say that their brethren made mistakes, and I think it's probably a coin flip whether or not Rafa gets off, because again, it's very difficult to overturn them. It needs to be unanimous. So I would say 50-50 chance on that. I definitely don't think Nocherino's would have gotten overturned.
Okay.
I've seen people saying that Nocherino might get extra games, but I think that would be incredibly harsh because there was absolutely no intent. It really wasn't that hard of contact, and it was to me because during the game I'm above the game in the press box. I'm looking down. I have a very good angle. He was sort of coming toward me when that happened. And I saw where his eyes were and what he was trying to do. And there's no doubt in my mind he thought he was getting to that ball first. In fact, he seemed a bit surprised that Polster got there ahead of him. So I don't think that it was anything but an attempt to play the ball, which doesn't always excuse a foul. And I do think it was a foul. And I do think it was probably a yellow card. I just don't think it warranted a straight red, especially under the circumstances.
Well, unfortunately...
And also, I certainly don't think it's worth additional games.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, like you said, you were in the press box, so you're looking down on it. So you have a visual perspective that gives you that perspective. Mm-hmm. A ref on the field is not going to have that perspective. They can only have what they see.
Right.
Unfortunate, but true. And so the rules right now, that's what's going to happen. So the Nocherino, while I'd rather not, as a fan, I can understand that one. Now, if it's...
I can understand it, too.
Now if it's give extra time, then no, I disagree completely. Especially because we did not get a reciprocal call on the should not have been called Rafa call, which usually in a game, for listeners who may or may not know, typically in a game, if you get a call like that that's egregiously wrong, you get a reciprocal call later on if something happens that mitigates that and so evens things out. We did not get that in that game.
No. Orlando City doesn't get makeup calls.
I know we don't, but I'm saying generally in soccer, and I know Orlando City doesn't, but generally in soccer that happens, which we did not, and it did not happen. And as such, actually, which is leading to the whole Ted Uncle hates us thing, which I'm sure we'll address soon. Mm-hmm. But anyway, given all that, I don't think that it should be. I don't even know.
All right. Well, let's move on. We'll talk about some other things. We'll get back to that. But I don't think. Again, I like I said, Nocerino, I thought in any normal game, under any normal circumstances, if he gets a red, I understand it. Even though I don't agree with it, I understand it. In this particular game, I thought the circumstances were baloney that they sent him off. He should have gotten the benefit of the doubt. It's not like he was like Jao Mera of Chicago had three very hard fouls, didn't even get a warning, let alone a yellow card. That was the first action that Nocerino had where he put a foot wrong at all the entire night.
And given that we had already had a straight red.
Right. That's exactly what I was getting at is the circumstances warranted a little more leniency. So even if you think it's a red card in
Ted
that
Uncle.
Circumstance, you know, maybe you say, all right, I'm going to give a break here because obviously you're already down a man. I've already screwed this game up, but maybe
Ted
you
Uncle.
Just doubled down. Ted Uncle doubled down. He said, I've already ruined this game. Why not just completely throw it out?
Ted Uncle. I'm sorry. I keep saying Ted Uncle for some reason. I'm sorry.
Well, never bring your drunk uncle to the soccer game, folks. That's what I got to say.
Wait, never bring your Ted Uncle.
Yeah. That was sort of the play on words. You just ruined it. You ruined
it, Dave.
Dave's a ruiner. Dave's a ruiner. Let's move on to the Orlando Pride, Dave,
because you know what? That was a great game.
They also played in a downpour at Orlando City Stadium on Saturday, and the ladies came home and got a victory. They remain unbeaten at Orlando City Stadium. And a 2-0 win over the Boston Breakers. Marta gets her first goal at home. And also, the first penalty kick in Pride history for the Pride. And she nailed it. So it was a good ball that sent her in. And she was the one fouled. She stepped around the keeper, Abby Smith. Abby Smith took her down before she could get to the... She would have gotten to the ball first and just tapped it in. Abby Smith took her out. So it was a penalty. And Marta scored the first goal to make it 1-0. And it wasn't too long after that. That was very early in the game, by the way. And then it wasn't too long after that. A nice build-up play. Camilla sends in Jasmine Spencer for an easy tap-in. And it's 2-0. And it really seemed like the Pride could have had a lot more goals. But they ended up winning by that score. And it was weird because all the NWSL games this weekend all ended up 2-0. But Orlando Pride is slowly creeping back in, David. They're going to get more and more home games, even though their next game's on the road after the international break. They're going to get more and more home games. They're creeping up the standings now, and they're starting to get better and better, and Camilla has been unbelievable. They're healthier, and they're going to get a striker back in a few weeks named Alex Morgan. So when she recovers from her hamstring issue, she will be joining the team. So things are looking good for Tom Sermonti's group.
It's almost like we talked about this before, where we talked about how the first part of the season was going to be rough, and then they would get people back, and they had Marta, and they had Alec coming back, and all of a sudden, things would start going their way. And guess what? Boom, it started to happen. So first thing, okay, Boston Breakers, they assert themselves early in that game. Marta getting free on that breakaway and then getting the penalty and then the penalty kick, which must not be surprised. She made the penalty kick. Okay. Mm-hmm. So one up. And then Camilla. Actually, I think Camilla was probably the best player in that game that day. She was creating chances all day. And Jasmine was on the end of one of those, put it in, got the second goal, and that put it away. I think that it's what we can see going forward. And like you said, I mean, we're going to get Alex back. I actually was with somebody who nominally watched soccer, not even like a all-day soccer person. And I said, oh, hey, by the way, the Pride are going to have Marta, and they're going to get Alex. And they were like, really? That's going to be potent.
Absolutely. And it's a testament to Jasmine Spencer, who started the season in a bit of a slump. She's really finding her form. She was the one that slipped Marta in with that pass that led to the penalty. She scored a goal. She had another very near miss at the post. She really had a good game, and she's starting to become a much more dangerous and confident player, which is good to see. So they're off this week. They're going to be back in action later in the month. They're coming back to play. They're actually going to be at Houston Dash, and then they're going to start to see, you know, more and more of these home games, and a chance for the Pride to move up in the table just at the time that they're about to get Alex back, and things can really move from there. So it'd be good to see some momentum built. It kind of would be the opposite of last season, where the team started off very strong and then just completely fell apart, and you know, once the Olympic break was upon us. And you know, it's good to see, because you know, as Pride fans, we want them to do well, and we kind of expect with this roster that they will do well, but we haven't seen those results, because those, you know, again, we get back to the road games, and not to be beating a dead horse, but it's so hard to win in this country in soccer on the road. And the NWSL is a very there's very little margin for error, because the teams are very, very closely aligned in terms of talent and ability and coaching and all of that. So good for Tom Sormani, good for Marta, good for Jasmine Spencer, and good for the team to keep a clean sheet, because Aubrey Bledsoe, I think that was her first clean sheet with the Pride.
Absolutely. And, you know, we can't overstate how good that is, especially given that it was home. And the crowd and all of that. And I know that was a big factor in all of it.
Yeah, good crowd of 5,000 plus in the rain for an NWSL game. It was the highest attended NWSL game of the weekend. So congrats to Pride fans. I'm sure that would have even been higher had there not been some really horrific weather going on. But, you know, the Pride weren't the only team to win from Orlando City's organization this weekend. Saturday was an OCB match as well. They went up to Pittsburgh to play the Riverhounds and fell behind pretty early in the game. Former USL Lion Corey Herzog putting the Riverhounds ahead in picturesque Highmark Stadium, where you can see both trains and boats go right past the field in the background. It's a really, really beautiful setting. If it had natural grass, it might be the best USL specific stadium in the league. It really might, you know, because obviously Orlando City Stadium is nice, but it's not a USL only stadium. No. They share it with an MLS team. But so Pittsburgh takes the lead, and you know, the lads from OCB though would not go quietly. They struck back, got a goal, made it 1-1 late in the game. This via a Haji Berry goal, by the way. Haji mm-hmm. was playing some moonlighting down in the USL for Orlando City. And it was weird. It was a great build-up, and then the ball just kind of pinged around the box and pinged around and pinged around. Nobody could really get a good, clean touch on the ball. And then all of a sudden, you know, sort of a half shot in, deflected off the defender, landed right on Haji's foot, and he put it in to make it 1-1. Later in the game, it was Zach Ellis Hayden getting his first professional goal. He cut in on a nice play, took a pass from the very same Haji Berry, and then curled in a shot, nice hard shot, curled in at the back post and made it 2-1. And you know, OCB goes to 500 on the season and climbs back above the playoff line despite being on the road. So other than that blip against Charlotte, in a game where OCB really did play the better soccer for most of the game and just had trouble in the final third a bit and just couldn't quite you know, they had a couple of defensive lapses that they paid for every single one. Charlotte was the only game that they have dropped in the last couple of months, and that was after only playing their second game in a month. So not, you know, a little bit of rust was to be expected, and it was nice to see they go to Pittsburgh and get the win, and that'll be a nice 3 points to bring back for the game against the Rochester Rhinos at home tonight, if you are listening to this when it drops.
Yeah, well, and of course, I mean, there's rust to be expected. I mean, two games in a month. I mean, heck, if I had that much time off, I would be bad at my job, too. I mean, you know, let's face it.
Well, you might not sell as many cars, is what you're saying, if you have
I might, yeah, exactly. Well, no, because to break it down real quick, I mean, it would mean I wouldn't have talked to as many people, which means I wouldn't have as many opportunities, which means I wouldn't sell as many cars. So if – let's translate that to soccer. So it would mean that I wasn't practicing as much. I wouldn't have had as many opportunities, which means I wouldn't have scored as many goals. So it's a tough thing. If you're not on the field, if you're not doing it, you know, it's one thing to practice, but it's one thing to play. If you're practicing, you're doing drills, you're doing whatever, and you might even be doing situational drills, but it's not like playing game time against somebody else who is trying to beat you. So that being said, given that there was two matches that in a month period, so to come in and to do that and to get that, that was fantastic, especially given that, you know, Anthony is dealing with, as we've noted before, lineups that are changing and whatnot. So I felt that I was, of course, as you were, I was watching that at the same time I was watching the Pride match.
Yep, I was watching double screen experience.
Right, double screen. So I'm like, my eyes are going back and forth. And so, I mean, I could only catch so much of it as I could. But, you know, I felt really good about it. I felt they did excellent. And then I, going forward, given that we've gone through that, well, I don't want to say tough for our season because they didn't have a lot of games, but the they've learned to play within whatever they have to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they played a lot of games early in the season, and then they had a month where they hardly played at all. So it's been sort of like two sides of the coin where too many games and then not enough games. And it'll be interesting. I think this team is ahead of where last year's team was. And I think it was great that they went and got a win on the road in a game where I didn't really think Pierre Da Silva had a very good game. And Richie Larea was suspended for yellow card accumulation. So they had one big gun missing. Another big gun was off his game a little bit. Albert Dequa, the co-leading scorer, wasn't on the pitch to start the game. He started on the bench and came in as a replacement later. So despite all that and being on the road to go out there and get a victory, especially even after falling behind, speaks very highly of this team. And I think it's and it was just a shame that Danny Deacon couldn't finish his shot. He crushed one off the crossbar. Speaking of crossbars, he had an opportunity to get his first pro goal, and he just was snake bitten on that shot. So good job by them. I want to find out what people thought about playing on a field with boats and trains going by. So I think we should probably get to this week's guest, and we'll do that right after this. Joining us here on episode 89 of the Mainland Podcast is Orlando City B midfielder Jordan Schweitzer. Jordan, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So I wanted to just jump right in and ask sort of an off-the-wall question to start with. The game at Pittsburgh the other night, Highmark Stadium, I've never been there, but I just wondered, is it distracting to play a soccer game with trains and boats going, like, right by the field?
It's actually not as bad as you think. It's definitely one of the more scenic venues in the USL, with the city being across the water there. It was definitely an experience. That's one of the great things about being able to play in this league. You get to see a lot of different places, and Pittsburgh's definitely a different place. So, always fun to be on the road, even better when you're at home, right? So we're definitely looking forward to being back in the stadium that we're comfortable in.
Well, and speaking of that, I mean, you know, Michael mentioned that, you know, trains and boats and all that. How much nicer is it at the brand new sparkling purple palace of Orlando City Stadium?
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, as a player, I mean, you really can't ask for much more than that kind of venue to get to play. So, I mean, you can ask any player. That's a dream come true to be able to play in a fantastic stadium. So, you know, everyone's a little more excited. I think when we get teams in, right, they're excited to play in a stadium like that, which I think it adds to the game and it adds to the energy and the excitement in the building. You know, no matter how many fans are there. So it's definitely a great experience, and you know, we always relish the opportunity to play at home.
Jordan, I want to go back to December when the club announced that you were coming in to play at OCB. You're a former homegrown for Seattle, and I just wanted to kind of get a sense of what when did you know you were going to be leaving Seattle? What was sort of the recruiting process that got you to Orlando, and what made you decide on coming to Orlando City?
Yeah, no, I think towards the end of my time in Seattle, you know, I was excited to get into Seattle, go back to where I grew up, and to be around family and to have the opportunity to play there was something that, you know, I hoped for as a young academy kid in their system. And as it kind of came to the end of the year, and you know, I was kind of thinking about options and having to make some tough decisions as far as my career goes. And getting a chance to talk with the staff here in Orlando and talk with Ant and kind of hear what was going on here and really get a feel for the community and then the community within Orlando City as an organization. It was something I was really excited about. Everyone's very, very on board with really putting Orlando City on the map from top to bottom. And I always want to be around a culture and a group of people who are motivated. I think that was the thing that really drove me is the opportunity to come to Orlando and be around that very passionate, motivated group of people to continue my development as a player and continue to push myself. I wanted to be in an environment where I could do that on a basis, you know, every single day. And that was really where the decision came down. And from then, the organization's been nothing but amazing from top to bottom and very welcoming and very proud to be able to be a part of this community, you know, as a player and then off the field as well.
Well, we're glad to have you. And, of course, you know, coming from a soccer town like Seattle is, obviously, to the soccer capital of the south of Orlando, obviously, you've now played in, you know, two of the biggest areas in the United States as far as that goes. Given that, of course, you've got what we would say is a little bit nicer weather, you know, maybe not quite so rainy, or if it is rainy, it's only rainy for like 2 hours, you know, and then it goes away and sunny again. But,
right.
You know, obviously you saw an opportunity here, and I'm actually most curious about what opportunity are you hoping to take advantage of in your time with Orlando City B?
I think, as I said, the opportunity to continue to develop on a daily basis is huge at any level for any player. And then that's the very fundamental, quick, very nice answer, right? And I think for me, too, it's with OCB, it's to develop individually. And at the end of the day, it's to win games and do well as a team, right? I think I'm a holding center mid. I'm a six. And, you know, a lot of the things that I do within, you know, my role is for the team. And I think success on any level for any player comes with team success. So, you know, we want to win as many games as possible. We want to, you know, make playoffs, and we're going to make a push for a USL championship and continue to develop each and every game as a group. And individually, I want to play at the highest level that I can for as long as I can and enjoy this amazing opportunity. Especially here in Orlando, like I said, with such a great organization. So for me personally, it's to continue to get in the lineup. It's to continue to win games with OCD and individually push for a roster spot in the MLS. I think that's every player's goal within a second team of an MLS affiliate. That's definitely within my my goals for this year.
Jordan, you touched on the fact that, you know, you're playing in the midfield. It's an area that there's, I think, a bit of depth in this organization. And of course, being an MLS 2 side, there's opportunities for first team players coming down to take minutes from you guys a little bit, and kind of forcing you in and out of the lineup and that sort of thing. What is it like for you to play and prepare for games in this kind of environment where you're really not sure from game to game who's going to be sent down to get minutes and that kind of thing? And what has Anthony Pulis told you about your future and what he'd like to see from you?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a great question. I think there's lots of moving pieces being with the second team, and I think as long as you look at it from a development aspect, it's always an opportunity to grow. Things, whether you're with a first team or a second team, constantly change in this career, in this profession, and I think that's no different, and it's definitely a bit heightened being on a second team, but it doesn't change the way that, the guys approach a session, approach development, I do the same. So for me, it's if I'm in the lineup, I'm going to do the best that I can. And if I'm not, I'm going to do everything that I can to make sure that decision is really tough to leave me out of a lineup, with the understanding that, as you said, sometimes first team guys drop down, and we understand that's part of being on a second team. And I think it's being open to the process of developing and understanding, to focus on controlling what you can control and allowing the rest to kind of be as it is at this point. As far as communication with Ant and the rest of the staff, Rob, it's good, I think. They're always challenging you to improve individually. There's film sessions and, throughout even our hectic USL schedule, there's times where we're constantly being, criticized and told, hey, this is, if you want to continue to develop and make it to the next level, here are certain things that you need to do. So the communication piece as far as, continuing our development has been fantastic, and there's that understanding that, there's a lot of things even for Ant or for Rob that necessarily is somewhat predetermined, right? So, mm-hmm. As a player, you can't really hold it against a coaching staff when, there's larger things at play, and obviously as a whole for the organization, there's things that they have to get done, and we're just a piece of that larger organization. And we're continuing to do the best that we can and develop and, as I said, make it difficult, for coaching staff to make decisions. You always want to be playing and always be in the lineup. But with it being a long season and with being a second team, that's not always the case. So continue to develop, focus on controlling what you can control each day and enjoying the opportunity to throw on the shirt every time a game comes around and you're on the team sheet. So, it's part of the process, and I'm definitely going to be enjoying every part of it here in the sun.
Well, Jordan, I think I can speak for both Michael and myself when we say that given how we feel about OCB and what the purpose of it is and what Ant is doing, you pretty much just summed up everything we've said all year in regards to that as far as, being a development squad. But at the same time, wanting to win, and your mentality there seems incredibly in line with what we're hoping for from the team. So, given all that, and given that you're on that same page, what I'm actually curious about is, what is it when you came to Orlando City and you're talking to Ant and you're talking to the rest of them? I'm sure you had some parts of your game that you thought, okay, this is, parts of your game are strong and parts of your game need development. what do you think that you are your strengths, and what are you hoping to develop to get you to that next level?
That's a great question. I think as a player, you have to be constantly, you know, evaluating yourself and being self-reflective. And I'm someone who tries to do that constantly. I think being a six, being a defensive-minded midfielder, for me, the strengths are tactically. I'm always aware of positioning and making sure that I'm in the right spots, the guys around me are in the right spots, someone who's communicating and making sure that the group is organized, breaking up plays and really helping with the transition from defense to attack, being a link between the back four and connecting with the guys higher up that, you know, are up top for a reason. Those are our goal scorers, those are the dynamic players, and the more times that I and the rest of the midfielders in the back can get those guys on the ball, more often than not, we're going to get good chances on goals, you know, and then four goals. So that's really me in a nutshell. I'm someone who really wants to make an impact on games through my defensive work and helping keep the ball in possession. And as I said, working it higher up to get those guys and good scoring opportunities. And as far as, you know, the areas in my game that I continue to work on, it's I think continuing to evolve as a six. I think playing at the next level, you look at guys like, someone like Will Johnson, who's more of an eight. You look at a Carrasco, a guy that I got to know a little bit when he was in Seattle when I was an academy kid. You look at a Notarino, very calm on the ball, very composed, and guys that obviously do the defensive work as well when they need to. So I think being with the second team, there's also an amazing opportunity to be around those guys, to see them day in, day out, to have opportunities to train with them, to get to see them in games. And, you know, I think that's the big piece is taking in that next step and that sense of professionalism and day in, day out consistency at the next level. I think that's the piece that I need to continue to work on and one that I'm continuing to evaluate in my own game. But it's someone that also as a six can make a difference in score a goal when they need to. I think that's one of the things that when you look at defensive midfielders or midfielders in general, it's those who can continue to make an impact on the game in an offensive manner, and that's something I want to continue to add into my game as well. So as I said, it's being in this environment with a great group of guys in OCB, a staff that's motivated and hungry and excited to develop and really focused on developing and winning games, which is I think that comes hand in hand, is really, really great for a young guy like me early in my career.
Jordan, you have a teammate that's had sort of a similar career path in terms of being signed by the first team, then being cut and signed to the reserve team in Danny Deacon. Did you offer him any advice or anything? I mean, I'm sure your situations weren't exactly the same, but have you talked to him about that and sort of given him some guidance on your experiences?
Yeah, I think any chance that you can help a guy out on your team, you know, in an experience that you've had, I think that's always something that we hope to do. And OCB, as I said, a fantastic group of guys, a hardworking group of guys, and Danny Deacon fits that mold perfectly. He came in and from day one there was no ego involved in it. He understand obviously and you know the professional side of this business early on, like I did. But I've been nothing but impressed in how he approaches every single training session from day one. And, you know, obviously going through it myself, understanding the emotions of and the highs and lows, I think he's done a fantastic job of balancing that out and really focusing on coming into training each day. And it's shown in the games that he's got an opportunity to play in for us. So, no, he's definitely a talented player and one that is continuing to impress, you know, all the players and the staff. So expect to see him on the score sheet and with some assists tallying up here, the more games he gets, he's a fun guy to play with. And I think, obviously, you know, it's not maybe where any player would want to be, given the path that he had set out for him. But I think in the long run, it's an opportunity to get a big learning lesson, and it's a very humbling experience. And I think he's definitely someone who, with the right mindset that he's had, you know, given the opportunity, he can make the most of it. So, you know, you try to help out, you know, field players in the group when they need it. But Danny's been someone who's been nothing but a pro, given the circumstances. So, yeah, expect big things from Danny Deacon. He's a great guy, and definitely going to get some goals here recently. So expect some good stuff from him.
Well, speaking of good stuff, you know, obviously we're hoping for the best from you. And, you know, coming as you did from Seattle, you know, a good program there, into here with Ant, I'm curious as to you obviously, you know, had made a conscious decision to do so, and I'm certain that you had conversations with Ant when you were coming in. What was it about what he said, and or, you know, what is it that he's doing in regards to not just your development, but the team development, but also, you know, related to you, that it is particularly hopeful, or, you know, something that you're enjoying or grateful for as you go forward in your career?
It has to be the staff, and that includes, you know, as I said, Ant and Rob, their attention to detail, the thought that they give to each training session, why we do certain things, our philosophy. I think with OCD being, you know, still a fairly new USL team, right, a new part of this organization, there's always going to be opportunities to grow and develop, you know, as a club within that. But there, right from the start, it was very clear that what had gone on last year, they wanted more from the second team. They were hungry. They were going to go after players that had shown well in the USL, you know, in years previous, and they were really, really passionate about the opportunity to not only grow OCB, but the players within it. And that's what stuck out for me, was that passion and that energy and that drive, and really the motivation to make not only OCB, but the players in it very, very good, and to go out and win things. I think, you know, every player, you want to win at any level. And I think, as I said, those are definitely the things that stood out. And it's shown from day one till I mean, it's going to be through the end of the season. The attention to detail, the training sessions have been very organized, and with the group of guys that they brought in, it's always a great environment to train in. And as a player, that's all you can really ask for. So those were the different attributes in speaking with Ant that stood out for me, and I think that's. That's something that any player would be attracted to. And, you know, the fact that I get to come and enjoy this amazing weather you guys have and be in this community is just an added bonus and one that I'm grateful for. But it's been an absolute privilege to wake up each morning and go to work. And that's the beauty of being here. So really, really enjoying the opportunity to develop in an organization and with a group of guys and a coaching staff that's motivated to get better on a daily basis.
All right, Jordan, before we let you get out of here, I want to hit you with some rapid fire questions here at the end. Just going to rattle them off real quick and just give me a real quick answer. We'll start with assess your performance this season on a scale from 1 to 10.
Oof, always room for improvement. I think I'm going to go with a 6-7 right in there.
All right. Okay. Assess the team's performance so far this season, 1 to 10.
We've had some really good games and some other games where I think we want them back. So at this point in the season, go with a 5.
All right. Who is the team's jokester?
Ooh, there's a couple guys, but I'm gonna go with Ben Polk. He's always in around the locker, so Ben Polk.
All right. Who is the most serious member of the team?
Ooh, easy. That'd be Jake, the keeper. He likes a good laugh as well, but he's definitely someone that is very, very much a pro, and you can read it on his face pretty quickly.
Who do you model your game after?
Ooh, that's a good question. Growing up, it was always Steven Gerrard. As I've gotten a bit older and a little bit more defensive, I really like watching Michael Carrick, even though that hurts as someone who grew up a Liverpool fan. Michael Carrick's definitely someone I enjoy watching.
All right, Michael, I'm interrupting here for just a second. Jordan, Liverpool fan here also. Don't give up on Gerrard. You'll never walk alone.
You always love to hear it.
All right. In three words, describe what it's like to play for the Canadian U23s.
Proud, motivating, and exciting.
Good or bad playing midweek, midday games in Canada in the upcoming trip?
indifferent. Is that an option?
Sure.
No, I think it's going to be one that I haven't experienced since college, playing a midday game. So going to have to get the guys fired up for that one. But definitely looking forward to getting 3 points at any time of day. It doesn't matter.
Last one. Describe Ant Pulis in one word.
Ooh. That's a tough one. Pulis in one word. I feel like the Brits are always stoic. Like, they're very, proper. And especially the way he comes off as a coach is very, very professional. He's exactly what you'd expect from a Brit. But he also does love a good joke from time to time. So it's nice to see him obviously connect with the guys as well. But, yeah, I'm going to go with stoic.
Stoic. All right. Jordan Schweitzer, you have been fantastic. We really appreciate you coming on the podcast with us. Have a great game against the Rochester Rhinos, and good luck to you the rest of the season.
Thank you so much. Enjoyed being on, and you guys have a great rest of your week.
All right. Well, man, I have to say we've done a lot of interviews on the podcast over the years, but Jordan Schweitzer was one of the better guests we've had, and I'm really appreciative of his time, and I'm glad that Jordan came on the program, Dave.
I could not agree more. I mean, the man, gosh, the one thing we hope is that they're going to be talkative, and I mean this in the best possible way. He gave us the info, and that's what we want.
Yeah, and hopefully he'll get the podcast bump. It took Giles Barnes a little bit of time to get the podcast bump, but he finally got his this weekend, last week on Wednesday, and hopefully Jordan won't have to wait a couple of weeks to get his podcast bump.
That's right.
So, Dave, we're going to do the mailbag. We finally get some questions at our Ask TMLPC hashtag on Twitter. You can, of course, tweet us. We're at The Mainland on Twitter, and use the Ask TMLPC, which stands for The Mainland Podcast.
Wait, are you saying that we have to answer people's questions?
Yeah, we're going to answer their questions now, Dave. So I hope that you have studied, because you are going to be tested.
Damn it. All right, let's go.
All right, so the first question, I'm not sure, this one didn't have the hashtag, so I'm not sure if this was intentionally to be on the podcast, but Chase Hoffnum on Twitter asked about Rafael Ramos's red card. They're going to lower it to a yellow. This man deserves to play. My response to you, Chase, is that the disciplinary committee will rule on it this week, and we probably will know, I'm guessing Thursday, whether or not he will have that rescinded. And if so, he will be able to play. If not, he will have to sit out one MLS game, which when you have a Scott Sutter is maybe not that big a deal. Dave, what do you think? Is this getting overturned or not?
Well, my answer is, of course, now as we're recording this, it's Tuesday night, so we don't know what's going to happen Thursday. But my inclination is, given the film and everything else, that it will be overturned. Michael gets to be the voice of reason. I'm going to be the voice of, hell yeah, it gets overturned. And that's bullshit, because it should have been overturned. Hell, it shouldn't have been called in the first place. So I say yes, it gets overturned. He gets to play. And however, if your follow-up question is no Trino, that's six.
Yeah, he's not even getting appealed, so that's not happening. So, I said earlier, 50-50 chance is what I think. Is what we're gonna see, we'll figure it out, I guess, and we'll be happy to report back on that next week. But the cool thing is, they're not playing between now and the U.S. Open Cup on Wednesday the 14th, so we will know before or by the time we have our next podcast without having played another game. Thanks for the question. We have a question from Kyle Excited on Twitter. He wants to know, why does Uncle hate Orlando? Did he get fired from Disney? Does he have an ex-wife here, or is he just not good at his job? Why don't we start with the first question, Dave? Why does Ted? Why does Ted Uncle hate Orlando?
Hold on, wait. Okay, go ahead.
Why does Ted Uncle hate Orlando?
Because he's just that kind of guy.
All right. My answer to that is that never prescribe to hatred what can more easily be explained with ineptitude. And I don't think he hates Orlando. I just think he's inept. And so that will answer your last question. Is he just not good at his job? No, he's not good at his job. And there's
Michael
a reason.
Citro, ladies and gentlemen, for win.
Yeah, there's a reason why people call him Drunk Uncle on Twitter, and he's not good. Did he get fired from Disney, Dave? Do you think Ted Uncle ever worked for Disney?
Is that a question for Twitter?
That is, yes, that's a question from Kyle Excited. He wants to know.
I'm going to say yes, he did.
Okay. I believe that the uncles live in Clearwater. I'm going to say that he has been to Disney many times, and maybe at one point in his life he was not tall enough to ride Space Mountain, and he's always held a grudge. I don't know. But I don't believe that he's ever been fired from Disney.
Oh, dang it.
And he does not have an ex-wife here, I don't believe. He, in fact, his wife is a pro referee and has done USL and NWSL games. So a lot of people didn't know that.
I do need to interject. I did get a tweet also earlier that said, what drugs is he on?
I will say that he is not on drugs. Again, the simpler explanation is he's inept.
He's inept. Okay. Well, yeah. You know, all right, fair enough. But, you know, I mean, we do want to answer the tweets get. So, you know.
That's right.
Yeah.
Do you think he's on something? Would you say that he's on something? I mean, they do call him Drunk Uncle on Twitter.
Well, you know what? I don't want to – it would be irresponsible of me to say anything. We try to be a professional, so I certainly wouldn't do that. Yeah.
Okay, so Elder Gorilla, which is a fantastic Twitter handle, Elder Gorilla wants to know, didn't MLS hire a retired FIFA ref to oversee the pro organization training and overhaul it? I have looked this up, Dave. I don't know if you have any knowledge in that area, but I have actually looked this up, and I remembered it from before the season, but I didn't remember the exact details. And so what it is that Howard Webb, former Premier League referee, was hired by Pro.
Okay.
He was hired by Pro, but he was hired to manage the video assistant referee program to spearhead that project. And that we haven't really seen that come to fruition just yet. It's still being tested. I bet All-Star break that it's going to be implemented. We've seen incidents of VAR being used around the world. So we know kind of have an idea of how it will work. But again, this is a situation where I don't know if you've watch college football or the NFL, but video replay doesn't always overturn things that should overturn. And sometimes it overturns things that shouldn't be overturned because, again, you've got the human element involved. So not only do the people have to, implement this technology properly, but they also have to make the correct decisions once they see the replays. And everybody sees things differently. And the referee in this situation, my understanding is that the referee himself will get a buzz from the VAR, and he'll say, you want to look at this play again. I think that's up to the referee's discretion. If he thinks he has a good enough view of it, then he probably will decline that. But otherwise, he will look at it himself. So it's the same guy who just made the call is going to make the call again after looking at the video. That's my understanding of it. And
yeah, that's not suspect at all.
So who wants to say, hey, 25,000 people, I messed up. My bad. I'm changing it. I think you're not likely to change things. Although we have seen things changed, and
we have. But here's what I would think would be better. All right, so we have a goal line, right?
Yes.
We could put a camera on the goal line. Yes.
Yeah, you're talking goal line technology, are you not?
Yes, okay. I am.
Yeah, I mean, but that's not going to help you with red card decisions and things like that. So that's just what I was getting. Now, I'm talking about this in the. I get the sense that this is Ted Uncle related kind of stuff.
That kind of stuff.
Okay. So yeah, I would say Howard, you're absolutely right to remember that Howard Webb has been hired by Pro, but is not in that kind of I'm going to overhaul the entire system kind of way. He's here to spearhead the VAR. He's part of his job is overseeing the development, education, assessment, and assignment of VAR. So the video assistant referees for Pro. That's what he's doing. So, yeah, he's not going to make Ted Uncle, Mark Geiger any better. Soren Stoica, Baldomero Toledo. They're all still going to be bad. It's just the way it is. So I hope that doesn't burst your bubble too much. But good memory, for sure, by remembering that there was a Premier League guy coming in. Elder Gorilla also asks, gazing into your crystal ball, Dave, do you see Orlando City being an academy-heavy team or still relying on outside talent 3 years from now?
Ooh, that's a great question. Okay. So, all right, 3 years from now. All right. My answer is I would love if we were – Academy ready 3 years from now, but I don't think we're quite there yet. I think it's going to take longer just because, MLS as a whole is developing that way. So while I would love it if that was the case, if we had that much talent piping in that we could, we would be great. But no, I don't. 3 years from now, I don't see it being that alone. We're still going to have influxes from other sources. So no.
Yeah, I would say.
But I do see input from academy.
Certainly. But the question is it going to be an academy heavy team?
No, not heavy. Yeah.
So Elder Gorilla, I will say, I think Orlando City will always be a team that relies on outside talent because I think that they're going to look for players overseas in South America, Central America, the Caribbean, Asia, everywhere they can look to try to get, the best player, the best team possible. I think they're going to always be a team that does that, but they are going to get more and more academy prospects come through the system. It's a talent-rich state. It's just a matter of time, and you're starting to see that with Pierre Da Silva's getting, an MLS contract. You're going to see guys like David Loera and some of the youngsters in the system are going to start coming up through, and it's going to be a beautiful thing. So,
you have to look at it this way. It's going to be a time thing. So, when somebody talks about that, they're talking about EPL. They're talking about they come through the system, boom, they're there. It's going to take time with MLS. We have the structures in place now where it's going, but it just takes time. That's all.
Yeah, I would say thank you for the question, Elder Gorilla, the two questions, and we appreciate it. Good questions there. Mark Johnson 386 on Twitter wants to ask us, if the Ramos red card is overturned, will Ted Uncle face any kind of punishment? I would say this to you, Mark. Ted Uncle may get a vacation even if the red card is not overturned. I think that that was just – it was a high-profile game between two Eastern Conference contenders on national TV on a Sunday night, and he ruined the game. So I think that he might get a week or two to think about his decision. He may get fourth official duty for a few weeks. There may be some ramifications. I don't think we'll ever see Pro come out and say we're suspending him for whatever – however many weeks because of this, but I mean, that's just how the referees organization does it. They don't necessarily do it that way. They say you just don't see them for a couple weeks, and that's kind of the under the rug way, the low key way of doing it, to where you're it's like a non-suspension, so to speak.
Well, the we won't have any satisfaction when it comes to Ted Uncle as far as Orlando City fans are concerned. And as far as, you know, Marcus is concerned, it's not going to happen. You know, what would be satisfactory is, okay, so we lost a player for a game, then he loses the game and he loses his money for a game. Unfortunately, not going to happen. Should it happen? Well, you know what? That's a question that could be posited. I mean, you know, if a ref is egregiously wrong, should they not be able to ref the next game? I mean, if we're going to have a player that is egregiously wrong, well, then maybe, you know, obviously we have a red card. They don't play the next game. If a ref is egregiously wrong, do they not play or ref the next game? So,
Yeah, Kristen Edmonds brought that up. You know, she said that if a player does something wrong, they end up having to sit. So it should also happen in other professions within the sport. So yeah, I think that there could be ramifications, but we'll never be told specifically that, you know, he screwed up.
No, of course not.
So thank you for your question, Mark Johnson. Just to differentiate, you know, you from all the other Mark Johnsons, I will say Mark Johnson 386. Thank you for your question, because I don't want anybody else thinking that I was talking to them just because their name is Mark Johnson. By the way, Mark Johnson was my favorite member of the 1980 Olympic U.S. hockey team. So I'm old. I've seen them play. Anyway, thank you folks for sending in your questions. Really appreciated that. You can hit us up on Twitter, hashtag AskTMLPC, or you can write to us. We are reachable via the old email system at themainland@gmail.com. Please spell Maine, M-A-N-E, themainland@gmail.com. So send us your letters, your cards, your well wishes, whatever you want to send us, your comments, your questions. And, you know, you could too. You too could be read on our podcast. Dave, we're just about wrapping this puppy up, and it's getting a little bit long because we've had a lot to discuss, but we've got still a few things left to discuss. So let's briefly touch on a few things. First of all, the United States men's national team and Venezuela played to a 1-1 draw in a friendly. Did you get to see the game, and what were your overall thoughts?
I actually did not, but I went back and looked at the highlights, and, well, let's say a couple things. One, it was tune-up. It was a purpose. Not only that, it was a purposeful tune-up. It was played at altitude. Bruce was trying to do this and that at altitude to make sure that the guys were ready. Two,
Pulisic.
Yeah. Pulisic.
Yeah. Christian Pulisic.
He is as good as I've always thought he is.
Yep, he's very, very good. Very talented player. Good young player. Scored the goal after the U.S. went down 1-0. Was a nice goal. And, you know, I thought he was one of the better players out there. The U.S. Soccer Federation did a very smart thing with having the Salt Lake friendly prior to a World Cup qualifier in Denver against Trinidad and Tobago, and then the trip to Mexico to the Azteca. So it's, you know,
all at altitude.
Big qualifiers coming up. Very smart decision to play at altitude and in game conditions. And now they'll go and be ready for the game in Denver against Trinidad and Tobago, which I don't know how much altitude training Trinidad and Tobago are able to do. And
probably not a lot. No.
So big game. Yeah. They got to beat TNT because that's a home game. And if they could just get a draw at Mexico, that'd be a pretty good result.
All right. So a couple things. Obviously, playing at altitude, that's Bruce Arena's goal. Two, Pušilić is the best player we've had in years as far as pure talent. I mean, he's 18, and quite frankly, he's going to be the U.S. player for years to come. And then three, well, the rest of them, they just got to show up. I mean, you know, Tim Howard, I mean, he was there and he did okay, but we all would like Bendick to play a little bit.
Yeah, and, you know, that's another piece of news we hadn't gotten to, that Joe Bendick was on the preliminary Gold Cup squad, as was Jonathan Spector. 40-man squad named as a preliminary roster for the Gold Cup. The 23-man final roster will come from that 40 men. Will Bruce Arena keep his regular keepers? Will he not? There are six keepers on there, and so three have to go for the Gold Cup roster. And if he decides not to play Guzan and Tim Howard in the Gold Cup and go with some other options, there is then Bendick getting a one in four chance of being left out. So he could still very well get into the side and make that team, although that's not a guarantee he'll get games. Jonathan Spector, probably a little bit more uphill battle with 12 defenders in the preliminary roster, but he has earned a look, and it's good to see. In fact, Joe said, you know, talked about how honored he was to get the call up or to get the to be on the preliminary roster, and he's going to just continue to keep working hard to try to make the final 23. So congrats to those two, and I should mention also Kyle Larin and Will Johnson, named to Canada's preliminary Gold Cup 40-man roster. So good job by all of them. Coming up Friday, we've got Trinidad and Tobago, and then the following week, just about 4 days later, at Mexico. It's Tuesday night, actually, that they'll be in Mexico to play El Tri. Speaking of U.S. men's national teams, Tommy Redding will be coming home because the U.S. U-20s lost to Venezuela in extra time, 2-1. It was 0-0 after regulation, and it wasn't close, Dave. It was. I stayed up really late for this game. It started at 2 a.m. Eastern time, and it went until, like I said, it went an extra 30 minutes. So it was basically a shooting gallery. Venezuela hit the woodwork a few times. Jonathan Klinsmann played out of his mind to keep them off the scoreboard. It was one-way traffic the entire game, and yet it was 0-0. And in the final moments of the game, the U.S. gets a golden opportunity, a free header for Eric Palmer Brown, and he just missed the net. If he puts that on frame, it's a smash-and-grab win for the U.S., but it was not meant to be. And then just about 5 minutes into the extra time, Venezuela gets a goal. They end up getting another one early in the second half of the extra period, and it's 2-0, and you know it's pretty much over. But the U.S. did pull one back, and the great thing about that is they became the first team to score on Venezuela in the tournament. So I think they can hold their heads up high. They reached the quarterfinals, and they were able to be the only team to score on Venezuela so far. So a pretty decent tournament for the U-20s, although it ends in disappointment.
Well, you know, it was a 2-1 loss in extra time, and, you know, they gave her everything. They left it on the field. You know, what more can you ask for? I mean, like you said, they were down and yet still found a way to keep pushing. So there's only so much that you can expect. And so we can take solace in that and move forward afterwards.
Yeah, well, we'll move forward to the U.S. Women's National Team's got friendlies coming up. Dave, there's no Pride players in the upcoming European trip due to Alex Morgan's injury, Ashlyn Harris's injury, and Allie Krieger was not named to the initial roster, so she got snubbed. So a rest for Allie, and, you know, we don't have to worry about Alex or Ashlyn coming back injured because they already are hurt. But we will cheer the U.S. women on against Norway and Sweden. OCB, we've mentioned, they're at Rochester. They're playing Rochester at home tonight. If you're listening to this live, if you didn't get to this on the day it dropped, then it's probably already in the past. And we are hoping that they can beat the Rochester Rhinos and continue to have a good start to the season.
Now, that's a quick turnaround for OCB in that it's not once every 2 weeks.
Yeah, and Saturday night in Pittsburgh. So it's a short week. It's a midweek game after a Saturday night game on the road. So it's going to be a big challenge. Rochester playing some pretty good soccer this season. They haven't played as many games as most of the teams in the Eastern Conference, but they're still in the middle part of that playoff group. So it'll be a big test. Rochester, you may remember just a couple of years ago, won the USL Championship over I forget who they beat. They beat Louisville in the in penalties in the Eastern Conference Championship. I forget who they beat, but they won the championship just the year before last. So it's going to be a tough one for Anthony Pulis' group, but hopefully they'll come through with flying colors, and maybe some MLS guys will get some minutes since we're in the international break. I think we've touched on just about everything we can, Dave. I think we should just put a bow on this and call it a finished and completed episode 89 of the Mainland Podcast. What say you?
I say I agree.
Nothing else we need to address here?
Not at the moment.
All right. So I think it's time to just tell everybody to go vote for the Bendick and Spectre double save as save of the week, which oddly enough was not on the initial group of nominees. But I think MLS came to their senses and said, but this is great. We could have put this in here. And as you mentioned earlier, as we were recording this, it was at 91% of the vote already, even though it went up very late. And I don't know if they just wiped the slate clean when they added them, or if they've just made up that much ground. But it was good to see. Two Lions on the team of the week, Spectre and Bendick. I think you can make a pretty good case for Will Johnson, although he's not on there. And also Zach Ellis-Hayden made the USL team of the week this week after scoring a goal, his first professional goal at Pittsburgh as the game winner. So that's going to do it for episode 89 of the Mainland Podcast. Please get your questions in to us at Twitter, at the Mainland, hashtag AskTMLPC, or you can also write to us at themainland@gmail.com. Please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, read our stuff at themainland.com, and please give us your honest rating on iTunes, and maybe leave us a review. That'd be great. So on behalf of David Rowe, I am Michael Citro, signing off for episode 89 of the Mainland Podcast, the way I always do, by saying, go City!